Ladies and gentlemen, our special guest today in the Beginner's Mind series is Mr. Andrew Bryant, a CSP certified speaking professional, and he's a global expert on a very important subject, self-leadership. He's a C-suite advisor, an award-winning coach, and a best-selling author. English by birth, Australian by passport, Singaporean by PR, Brazilian by wife, and Portuguese by last known location. Andrew is adept at moving across cultures. He's on a mission, and his mission is to wake people up to their best possible selves. And I hope we do that today through this conversation. And he does it. He specializes in waking people up through his books, keynotes, and coaching. He's external faculty for a number of universities across the world and contributes to women in leadership programs. And he's most proud of the work he does building self-esteem for at-risk teenagers. From Singapore to Silicon Valley, he has inspired, informed, and ignited. Inspired, informed, and ignited audiences to take ownership, to take charge of their life and responsibility, to be more creative and collaborative, and to step up to leadership in a digitally disruptive age. Please join me in welcoming Mr. Andrew Bryant.
Well, thank you for an amazing introduction. I think I'm going to get you to do any introduction from this point forward.
I'd love to do that. And, Andrew, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking out the time at a very short notice, agreeing to have this virtual chat, which I'm confident is going to add tremendous value around you, because given your expertise, that I was watching one of your videos recently, and I saw that it was 1999 when you first gave your first public presentation in a cafe.
Yes, my first paid presentation. So I saw a professional speaker at a conference, and you know, with the arrogance of youth, I thought, "Well, I could do that." and then I wondered why nobody booked me to be a professional speaker, and then I realized that nobody books you unless you've been seen, and you don't get seen unless you've been booked. Right. And a friend of mine who was a bit of a marketing genius said, "Well, why don't you book yourself?" And so we hired out a cafe, sold tickets, and I gave my first paid speech. So I guess the first lesson to wake people up and inspire them is don't expect anybody to back you unless you're prepared to back yourself.
Wow. I love the whole idea of booking yourself. Pick yourself, book yourself. And it's so easy to do now in a digital age. I mean, you know, back in 99, you had to book a physical space. And now we've got Facebook and YouTube and all these tools where we don't have to spend a lot of money. And it's relatively easier to pick yourself and publish, you know, and share your message with the world. Andrew, you're a subject matter expert, one of the leading global authorities on the subject of self-leadership. And tell us, what is self-leadership in simple terms, and why do you think it's so important? And it's obviously been the focus of your research and your work for several decades now. What is it, and why is it so important?
So in my 2012 book on self-leadership, which I co-authored with Dr. Anna Kazan, we define self-leadership as the practice of intentionally influencing your thinking, feeling, and actions towards your objectives.
Okay.
So let me break that down. Firstly, it's an intentionality.
Right.
And the important thing is that, you know, a lot of people don't live life with an intention. They don't have a reason why they are doing things. And then the ability to influence. And so we're talking about self-influence of our thinking, feeling. So we are thinking, feeling machines. Each moment of we're conscious, we have thoughts and we have feelings. But are we in control of our thoughts and feelings, or are they controlling us? I mean, we've all had the experience when we've lost it, we've got emotional over something, or we've had a thought that has derailed us. So self-leadership is a practice, just as taking a shower is a practice. If you don't take a shower today, tomorrow, and the next day, you will certainly stink. If you don't practice intentionally influencing your thinking and feeling, then your attitude will stink, your behaviors will stink, and therefore you won't achieve your objectives. So self-leadership at its core is very simple. It's a daily practice of being intentional about what you think, what you feel, and how you act or behave towards an objective, which means you've got to have objectives.
So I like the whole idea about being taking charge, about being intentional, because a lot of people, as you rightly said, the whole point of waking somebody up depends upon the core assumption there that they're asleep, and rightly so, within an age of social media where we're constantly distracted, where we're flooded with more information that we need, we are perhaps not intentional. We are driven by stimuluses. And so I like the idea. So A, it's intentional. And then intentional about what? Intentional about your thoughts, as you write, thoughts, feelings, and actions. Okay, great.
Great. So it seems really simple, but it's in practice, it takes a little bit more because, as you say, people are asleep. Why are people asleep? Because we are the result of the algorithm of time, place of our birth, so our DNA, our early childhood experience, our early educational experiences, our early work experience. So we're very clearly programmed, as you say, stimulus response.
Right.
And so often we don't realize that we are acting out a script or a narrative that's not even ours. It's written for us by,
right?
Yeah, it's handed to us by our parents and by our culture. And sometimes that works, and elements of it might be very powerful, and some of it's not working for us. And so the ability with self-leadership is to step back and notice the thoughts, notice the narrative or the script, and go, is this working for me? Right. Is this moving me towards an outcome I want? Is this making me happy in the present? Mm-hmm. And the moment that we are intentional about observing and then editing that script,
right,
then we are the driver rather than passenger of our lives.
I love that. That's so profound. And I don't know whether this is a Japanese or Chinese proverb I read somewhere, which went something like this. It's difficult to wake someone up who's pretending to be asleep. Right. So I try that with my kids very often. If they're pretending to be asleep, it's hard to wake them up, right?
Oh, they're already awake. Yeah. Some people will intentionally choose a script that is clearly not helpful for them. I mean, and there are various things that self-sabotage or derail our self-leadership, and some of them are, I mean, one of the key one, of course, is self-deception, is you are believing something about yourself that clearly isn't evidenced in fact.
And you reject all evidence to the contrary, you know, so you like want to perpetuate the script, as you rightly said. I think if I'm getting it correctly, I think one of the first steps, Andrew, as I understand from our conversation thus far, is the awareness, is the intentionality, is the self-reflection. Yeah.
Yeah. So self-leadership has to start with self-awareness. So we become aware that we are actually not our thoughts and feelings, that we can have a balcony view and as if we were looking down on a balcony, maybe on a dance floor. Let's say, imagine a school dance and you could be on the dance floor with your partner dancing and you'd be aware of your own feet and you'd be aware of your partner and the people immediately around you, but you wouldn't possibly be able to see the DJ or the band or the people standing around the edge. But if you're on a balcony, you can look down on the dance floor and see the various dancers. You can see yourself in context. And so having this balcony view is taking a step back and going, oh, so that's why I did it that way, or that's why I reacted to that.
Right.
Another metaphor and analogy I love to use, and you're coming to me from the home, the birthplace of my favorite game, which is chess. And chess is a beautiful metaphor for life, because you can, in my 2012 book, I asked, which piece on a chessboard are you? Are you the pawn, or are you the just being helpless, being moved around, or are you a rook or a castle? Are you defensive and you like details and you like standard operating procedures, or are you more like the knight, entrepreneurial, jumping forwards and sideways? Are you the bishop, cutting diagonally through the paperwork, the sales guy that promises the thing to the client without operations working out how they can even deliver it? Or are you the queen multitasking, or in the original game of chess in India, the vizier or the advisor or the coach? Or are you the king, dependent on all the other members of the team?
Right.
But that's how we get tactical. We get zeroed into what role am I playing right now? But as we have self-leadership, we can step back and see the whole board. And then we can step back again and see that in life we're playing multiple games of chess. We're playing our relationship game. We're playing our social game. We're playing our work game. And with each of these, just like Bobby Fischer, we could have an intention and a strategy taking us to where we want to go.
Fantastic. I love the analogy of the chessboard. And I remember Jack Canfield, probably in one of his live workshops, he used to do this exercise. divide people into, you know, small groups of two and then ask each other, who are you? And the other person has to come up with 10 different responses. It begins with, you know, superficial stuff, name, designation, what I do for a living, et cetera, et cetera. And after three or four responses, people really begin to, you know, sort of open up about who they really are, you know, their likes and their dislikes and their triggers and the conditioning and their dreams and their fears and their aspirations. And after they're done with this exercise, which I believe is a very powerful exercise, and for those tuning in into this conversation right now, I encourage you to do that with somebody that you trust, somebody who can push you a little bit outside your comfort zone, or you can even leave us your responses in the comment section. Who are you? Who are you really beyond the name, the script, the ethnicity, the religion, the profession? Who are you really? And that really has been, you know, a fun exercise to help just peel off the layers, because deep within lies the switchboard or wherever we have to make repairs, not at the surface, but deep, deep within. So we've established that self-awareness is the first step towards this. And Andrew, in your opinion, for an average corporate worker or a young student who might be listening to this conversation right now, or to a homemaker or or a freelancer, what might be some of the tools available that could help people develop more self-awareness?
Well, the first tip or strategy, which has been around forever, is to journal. And this is an electronic paper journal that I have. And, you know, I wake up in the morning and I set my intention for the day. I check what I had set for an intention yesterday. Did I achieve it? So I'm reflecting, was I on target for the day before? Wow. So any, you know, if you mentioned Jack Canfield, but if you go through any of the success writers, whether it's, you know, within this century or you go back 2,500 years, the ability to journal, to actually observe what is my narrative and how is that narrative acted out. Mm-hmm. So if you're not journaling, you're missing out on a huge piece. Mm-hmm. When I coach C-level executives, I will tell them that they need to make at least one, preferably two appointments a week with themselves. Mm-hmm. So often we have open diaries. We allow access to other people. You might have a VA. And if you have to make up a fake client, Mr. Black, or and twice a week you have an appointment with this person. And I would encourage, and I mean, I remember, you know, I used to tell CEOs, leave your BlackBerry with your secretary. That's how old, you know, long I've been doing this work when people have BlackBerry. But, you know, leave your mobile device.
They're no longer around.
Take a note. Right. Go to a coffee shop or a library. Go somewhere away from the office. And if you're working from home, same thing. You know, walk down the street. When I do this, I will go for a walk with an audio book on, and then I'll stop at a cafe, get out my notebook, and I'll think about what I want to do, my creative stuff. And you need to be disciplined and making an appointment with yourself, because everything else happens to us and we're all busy. And, you know, if you're working for the man, as it were, you know, you've got tasks and being set for you.
Right.
But what tasks, what objectives are you setting for yourself? Right. We are only really motivated to achieve our own goals, not to achieve somebody else's goals. Your boss, your organization has said you need to achieve this target. But unless you make that your target and it's for you, right? Even though the organization benefits if you make more sales or you transform a process or you write a set of code, but it needs to be your self-satisfaction. It needs to be your goal. Then you stay motivated. Absolutely. And that's successful people, of course, are only working for themselves. Each of us should be the CEO of our own business, the captain of our own ship.
Right.
And regardless of whether you're working for somebody else, you need to be in charge of your life.
And I think if I just rewind just a couple of very important things that you've said. One is step away from your regular whatever work environment. It's important to step away. It's important to pause. It's important to get off the treadmill in order to determine what your goals are. Even if you're working for someone else, the intrinsic motivation is not going to happen unless you can correlate it with what's important to you as well. And that involves, as you rightly said, a walk in the park, going to a cafe, and then whether it's an electronic journal, whether it's if you pen and paper or whatever it happens to be, the medium of pouring your thoughts out on paper. The third thing I really liked, Andrew, is what you said about taking out time every morning to set the intention for the day. I believe that's such a powerful thing, because what happens typically is these days we wake up and one of the first things we do automatically is reach for our phones. And these stimuluses begin, the WhatsApp good morning messages and the emails, and then you're driven. Even if you try to switch off, this at the back of your mind is that thing, that email you need to respond to, et cetera, et cetera. And we have not set the intention for the day. So thank you so much. That was a very powerful yet simple, actionable takeaway right there, guys. I love that. Schedule time with yourself. Schedule time with yourself. Take out time every morning to set the intention for the day. I still do. Sometimes I miss it, but I call it morning decisions, which is I do a little bit visualization with it as well. And that gives me at least some direction of, I know there's a lot of good things that are going to hit me left, right and center, but at least I have some direction of where to go to.
Well, let me pick up on your visualization, right? Uh-huh. So human beings are goal-oriented machines, but if we cannot see it, if we can't imagine it, we cannot move towards it.
Correct.
So we often set goals in terms of, you know, having things. You know, I want to save money so I can buy a car or a watch or a handbag or a house or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And so we tend to think about, oh, I want to have this. And we often fail to set goals in terms of who do I want to be?
Right.
Because being precedes having, right?
Uh-huh.
Because being drives doing, and doing creates having. So when you visualize, one of the key self-leadership exercises is to say, who is the best version of myself?
Wow.
I'm 60. I'm actually quite proud of that, because I never thought growing up, you know, in the times of the band The Who that says, you know, I hope I die before I get old, was one of their songs, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm massively surprised to be 60. How did that happen? Mm-hmm. But I tend to think, well, this
and
is
amazing at 60, adding so much value to the world, and amazing at 60, adding tremendous value to the world. In you, yeah, definitely.
As well, and I want to talk about value, so let's circle back to that. But I think about myself as, okay, is this is version 6.0 or version 60.0? Mm-hmm. And if I look at version 5.0, version 4.0, and with deep embarrassment look at version 2.0, you know, things I did in my 20s and that I'm massively embarrassed about now, of course. And I can see a progression. But in terms of the intentionality and imagining who I'm going to be, just after my 60th birthday, I went and spent some time on an island in Sweden with a friend of mine who's a creativity expert. And I spent a week about thinking about what's my next decade, mm-hmm. who am I going to be, and then segueing into your point, what value am I going to deliver?
Right.
So in your Jack Canfield exercise that you referenced, you're talking about people thinking about who am I? You know, I'm a father, or I'm a brother, or I'm a sister, or all of those functions.
Roles.
But an element of that exercise I do with my clients is to say, and what is the value you give? If you could use this sentence to them, hi, my name is, and my value to my company, my family, the world is, and if you can finish that sentence stem. Mm-hmm. Then you're taking the self-leadership, and then it's self-leadership to influence. And why do we need self-leadership? We need self-leadership because once we can influence ourselves, we begin to influence those around us. And using another analogy, that of the electromagnet, the piece of iron with an insulated copper wire wrapped around it, that our intentionality is the current that runs through that wire, which increases the electromagnetism. Mm-hmm. And you notice people with charisma or people who are influential, they have a strong intentionality, and that is attractive. They attract people to them.
Right.
And so your intention becomes influential.
Because we love clarity. You know, we love meeting someone who has that clarity about what they're going to do next in a world which is full of people who are constantly distracted or bored or disengaged, right? And here walks in somebody who knows exactly what their next two or three steps are. They might not know what they're doing in the entire next decade, but they at least figured out what their next few steps are. I can relate to that. In any setting, I often give this example to when I'm speaking to youngsters in schools and colleges. I talk about this. I said, look, if you go to KFC or McDonald's or some other fancy place, which is like a fast food place, which is 50, 60 options on the menu that you can customize. And you're standing there and there's a lot of people waiting in the queue and you don't know what you want. You're going to waste everybody's time. And there will be somebody who will sneak up from behind you, say, excuse me, can I have the chicken burger with this, 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 this? And then, of course, and the cashier is going to attend to that person first because they know what they want, that intentionality, that clarity. Is there?
I do a similar exercise when I'm working with teenagers. Mm-hmm. I say, look, if you go out on a Friday night and you, everybody says, oh, I'm hungry, what should we eat? And somebody goes, well, I want pizza or I want KFC. And you go, well, I don't care, whatever you want.
Right.
Well, we're not going where you want, right? Mm-hmm. So I actually, I have some cards that I had made up, you know, with KFC or pizza or various choices. And when I was in Singapore, of course, we had the local dishes. And,
yeah,
and
the hawker, the vendor, the hawker centers, I love them.
with
all the street food.
Favorite dishes there. Mm-hmm. And a couple of the cards were blank. And the game was, you know, the kids were in groups of, you know, 5 to 7. And you got a card and your job was, without revealing your card, to sway the group to go to where you wanted to go. And, of course, where you wanted to go was delineated by the card. So it might be KFC and you don't like KFC, or it might be pizza you don't like, but that was the card you got. And the blank people didn't care, so they could be swayed. Mm-hmm. And this was, you know, firstly, we'd run this exercise with no self-leadership, and then I would do a session on how they could be intentional and how that intention. And then we play the game again, and it's a very different scenario when people know that when I'm clear about what I want, I can listen to what somebody else wants.
Sure.
And this is where it goes. So this is not conflict. So the beauty of self-leadership is it's not selfish. If I know what I want, if I know what my value is, then I'm not threatened by anybody else. Mm-hmm. But I can listen to what's important to them, and I can see if there's a collaboration. And what ends up happening, and I'm, you know, hopefully the teenagers aren't watching this because they'll get the end of the game. But the end of the game is that the group discovers that they can actually collaborate to find a solution where everybody's happy.
Right.
That is beautiful to watch. And so the conflict goes away. When you know what you want, you can pay attention to what others want.
Right. And it begins with, so if you don't know what you want, then it's a scenario where nobody knows what they want. And then somebody's got to fill in that gap. And what if that someone is that you don't like? What if that direction is that you really don't like? And then people become resentful about it. They start complaining about it. But hey, when you had your opportunity, you didn't utilize it. And as you rightly said, Andrew, it begins with that internal clarity first. So I think it's really important that we set about the time to gain that internal clarity about what we want to do.
Just building on that before we segue, because this will segue us nicely to leadership. But the another way of looking at self-leadership is, what is the absence of self-leadership? Sort of the René Descartes thesis, antithesis kind of thinking. The absence of self-leadership is really easy to spot, and you just articulated it beautifully, which is, you know, blaming, complaining, and a victim mindset. Right. So the moment you are blaming, complaining, or you have a victim mindset, you have zero self-leadership at that point. And when you see somebody doing that, that's when they need the self-leadership.
So let's talk about the next aspect of this. So I've worked on my internal clarity. I'm becoming more intentional. I am spending time with myself. I'm becoming self-aware. I'm going through those. So I'm working on my thoughts, beliefs, and actions. Those were the three steps you mentioned when you defined self-leadership. So I'm already working on my thoughts. But the next roadblock that I'm most likely to hit before we move on to leadership, the next roadblock, when we talk about positive thinking or affirmations, we see a lot of comments from, you know, social media followers that talk about, I try to tell myself, you know, I'm someone who's charismatic, or, you know, I could be a leader, or I could change this, et cetera, et cetera. But then I have another very strong negative voice inside my head telling me, no, no, it's not you. It cannot be you. Don't you know what happened in your past, et cetera. So they hit a major roadblock, and I feel it's the layer number two, which are the beliefs. Andrew, and with your extensive experience with, you know, coaching C-suite executives and so many people across the world, what are the top self-limiting beliefs that you've encountered, and what could be the simple few steps to maybe overcome them, or at least the first few steps?
So firstly, let's understand what a belief is. A belief is an idea that we have said yes to. Okay. So a belief in itself isn't real. It's an idea, concept, a construct that we or the world has said yes to. And so, but when we have a belief, it feels real to us. Look, simple but silly example is, you know, my mother, who, you know, may she rest in peace, but she grew up during the war when there was rationing. So her belief is, you know, you needed to eat all the food on your plate because there might not be food tomorrow. Right. So guess what? I grew up like many kids around the world with eat all the food on your plate because there might not be any food tomorrow. So so an idea, eat on your food, becomes a belief. I must eat all the food on my plate. Right. And then I moved to Asia where I would eat all the food on my plate. And my Asian hosts would believe that if the guest left the table hungry, then they would have failed as a host. So there's two beliefs clashing, right? Because I would eat everything on my plate. I would be full, but they put more food on my plate. But because my belief was in operation, there is an effect of that belief, which is I went from a six-pack to a family pack in a very short period of time.
Asian hospitality at its finest, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It absolutely is. So, I mean, simple but silly example. And so the idea is, well, do I have to eat all the food on my plate? Right? I mean, it's an idea. Is it my idea? No. Right? Because the Japanese have a very different idea. They have the idea that you should leave the table, you know, a little bit empty, you know, eat seven eighths or
one of the secrets of their longevity.
Yes, it's part of the Ikigagi principle. So, you know, they have a different belief. So, so beliefs are ideas or concepts that that we've said yes to or has been said yes to for us. So the way to change a belief is to say no to it. Right? This is just a belief. We have to say no. This is no longer real. So step one, you have to identify, and that's where we did the self, you know, this narrative or belief that this is right in all circumstances. Well, reframing, and a coach will do this for you. They will say, well, how's that working out for you? You know, eating everything on your plate. How's that working out for you? Well, I'm getting fat. Do you want to get fat? No. Therefore, is the belief serving you towards your objective? No, it's not. So that's the entry point to how do we reframe and blow up a belief. So so it's the awareness of that. Yeah, but your question to me specifically, and I did listen to your question, was what are some of the top beliefs? Well, the top beliefs actually are around the concept of identity. And the biggest and most dangerous one is I'm not worthy. I have no value, or I will only have value if the following criteria are formulated, You know, you must be a good boy, you must be a good girl. Therefore, you have only value when you follow the instructions of a authority figure, whether that's your parents or your boss, et cetera. And the moment you step outside of that, you have no value. Now, that's incredibly challenging for people who don't fit the mold, who do choose to leave the obvious framework in which they were born, whether that is gender or ethnicity or orientation, any of the
Even careers, you know, for example. Even careers for a choice of profession. I could totally, sorry, I'm just interrupting you there for a moment because I could completely relate with that, moving from one culture to another and then being raised under. So typical Indian middle-class parents, the belief that we've been handed down as far as our careers went was find a job, preferably a government job, put your head down, don't ask any questions, don't get noticed and save some money, you know, retire, have kids. No, it's the other sequence. Have kids and then retire. And then and that's it. And go for an early morning walk after you retire. So that was the script, which worked very well for them, for that generation. When somebody like me said, I'm moving back from, you know, I had a good job in the UK or Australia or other countries that I spent time in. I'm leaving that career and I want to experiment with this. That was a major, you know, I hit major belief roadblocks. Internally first, and then with my family as we progress. So I can completely relate with that. Yes,
exactly. You know, you want to be an artist, but your parents want you to be a doctor or a lawyer. So even though we made the choice, because that frame, that belief was so strong, we can often think, well, I'm not valuable, I'm not worthy, or I will only be worthy when I get the degree. And we know the education system is a massive rort with this because you get a degree and then they say, well, you'll only be worthy when you get a master's degree. So you go get a master's degree and then they say, well, you'll only be worthy when you get a PhD. So you go get a PhD and then they say, well, you'll only be worthy when you're published. Right? And so you're on this constant treadmill. So obviously, I help my clients break these beliefs down and ask them if they're useful. But I'm going to, for your audience, give one thing that will transform it. It is the aspirin for all headaches. And that is this mantra, right? And that is, I have nothing to prove, only things to improve. Now, the power of this mantra is it accepts the work in progress. Because if you say, hey, I'm good looking, I'm rich, I'm strong, I'm powerful, you can have a cognitive disconnect and say, well, no, you're not rich. Check out your bank account. Bank you're not balance, beautiful right? because you compare yourself to this person. But with I have nothing to prove, it says, look, I'm already valuable. I'm a human being. You know, I have survived the worst of every day in my life, and I'm still here. Right. So I've got nothing to prove. But there's always things to improve. Back to my version 2.0, 3.0, 4.0. What's the best version of myself? So I have things to improve. I can be a better version of myself. And this mantra, whilst it won't cure everything, it will make you feel a lot better. One more time. I have nothing to prove. Only things to improve.
That is wonderful. That deserves a round of applause. Thank you. So all we need to do is rewire and, you know, refocus. And I believe where we spend time focusing on, where we spend our energy focusing on, that increases in size and importance in our lives. So if we are spending all of our time and energy improving ourselves, social media sort of fueled that activity a bit more, right? A lot more comparisons, obsession with your own self and your own achievements. You need to move away from that and start focusing on what I can improve. Today, Andrew happens to be a little bit of a, we achieved a milestone on our YouTube channel. We have completed 700 videos and we got an email notification. Nobody in the team was aware. We've hit the 700 video mark. So we had a few high fives in the team and then we reflected on it. Thank you. Yes. an opportunity to pause and reflect and look back, just get together with the team and celebrate small victories. And what we noticed is exactly what you said, that we were so focused on improving. We were so focused on enjoying the process. We were so having fun experimenting with different formats. Some of them did not work at all, you know. But the end outcome of what we have today is the combined mixture of all of those things. So I love that, what you just said. And I'll repeat it one more time for the audience. I have nothing to prove, but a lot to improve. Is that right?
I have nothing to prove, only things to improve.
Only things to improve, right. Very powerful, powerful. So,
congratulations on YouTube. I just reached the YouTube partner level today. So that's synchronicity. And this is a great example. Thank you very much. But of course, you know, that is significantly less than your, but I'm happy with my achievement and I can celebrate your achievement without it diminishing from me. You know, the Buddha said that comparison is the seed of all unhappiness. I'm not comparing myself with what you've done. I'm celebrating what you've done because that means it's also possible for me. And it's very important that you focus on process goals as well as objective goals, right? And focusing on the process, enjoying the process. And I write a lot about this in my new book, which is coming out about the time that this video will go to air, right? It's called The New Leadership Playbook. And I look a lot at how objectives are set by organizations, by bosses, that people have to feel part of the objective, but also that the objective we're focusing on the process because the landscape is changing so rapidly. I mean, the last 3 years has told us that the landscape, but if we keep doing the right things, we still make progress. Even in the midst of the pandemic, you've made progress. Congratulations to you.
Thank you. And I appreciate that. And the fact that we're having this conversation, despite this variance in the numbers, right, that we've still come together outside of our shells of that identification with those numbers and who we are, and then having this collaboration here today to add value with one single purpose is to add value to all the audiences, yours and mine, whether they are listening to this on a podcast or watching it live on YouTube, wherever it happens to be. And I think that is when you rise above this, you're no longer a prisoner of the outcomes. And sometimes this is the biggest trap, that this is the biggest side effect of any sort of success in numbers, is that you then are driven by it. Everything that you do is orchestrated to have more of that outcome, rather than thinking, hey, How did we actually have this outcome in the first place? And I keep reminding myself and my team, we have this because we enjoy what we do, because we enjoy, you know, maybe sharing stories or reading poetry or interviewing people like yourself, thought leaders like yourself, and then publishing it and sharing it with the world. Those are the drivers. The outcome is, you know, the universe takes care of it, and it's on wonderful way, and it's fun. And it's fun to know, to celebrate those occasions. But what's even more enjoyable is the process of doing it. And I think that's well said there. Thank you, Andrew.
My pleasure.
Let's move on to the individual's taking care of the self. Yes, there's increased self-reflection. There's increased course correction. There's more self-talk. There's more challenging self-limiting beliefs. And now the person feels ready to show the path to other people, to be in a position of leadership. Is that a natural transition? Are there going to be any roadblocks? And what do you feel are the top qualities that a person should work on? What's the inner work required for, you know, when we're doing the self-leadership methodology, what's the inner work required in order to be a better leader of other people, especially in these changing, challenging times that we are in right now?
Okay, so that's a big question. Let me break that down a little bit. Yes, firstly, please. I would just make a slight adjustment to the way you've articulated this, that it's a sequence, that you develop self, then you lead others.
Okay.
Typically, both of those things actually happen in parallel, right? Mm-hmm. I think we're working on our self-leadership all the way up, you know, from individual contributor to CEO, mm-hmm. you're always working on self-leadership. I mean, I still work on self-leadership with my CEO clients. So, it, you know, both actually grow in tandem. Mm-hmm. Your question around sort of roadblocks is a lot of people, and again, it's the limiting belief, is that people are educated to say, oh, you have to be really good at what you do, right? Mm-hmm. Technically competent. Whether you're an engineer and any variety of, I mean, engineers come like flavors of ice cream, you know, electrical engineer, mechanical engineer, electronic engineer, materials mm-hmm. engineer, et cetera. Yeah. So, you know, whether you're an engineer, whether you're a doctor, whether you're a lawyer, whether you're an entrepreneur, you tend to do this deep dive. And the assumption is, if I get really good at what I do, then I'll be recognized and then I'll be promoted.
Right.
And that works up into a certain level, and then you hit you really hit a roadblock, because the area that you need to develop in parallel to your technical competence is this ability to influence. Mm. And let me define influence in the simplest possible way. Mm-hmm. Influence is the ability for you to get somebody to say yes to something that they wouldn't have otherwise said yes to if you hadn't asked.
Right.
Right. So I'm here on your show early in the morning for me because you asked. You influenced me. I said yes. Mm-hmm. My pleasure. But, you know, problem solved.
Right.
And you know, there's a win-win. There's collaboration. We both want to, you know, put value back into the world. So there's an alignment of values, all of those things. That's why I said yes. Mm-hmm. So understanding influence is very important. Now, and the ability to ask is important. Mm-hmm. So while people are busy focusing on developing their competency as an engineer or professional entrepreneur, they forget to develop their ability to ask, to collaborate, right. uh-huh. to invite, to influence. And that, just like working in the gym and increasing how much you can lift, that mm-hmm. also is developed. Because an entrepreneur will go to venture capitalists and say, you know, I want you to invest $500 million in my company.
Right.
Now, you can't just go up to somebody and say, give me $500 million. You have to first start by asking your mom and dad, hey, can you give me $1,000 to start my company, right? And that's the first, you know, and toughest for most people, right?
Uh-huh.
So you develop the ability to ask and to influence. And leadership is always about influence. All of the great writers on leadership way preceding mm-hmm. me talked about leadership is influence.
Right.
The ability to ask in a way that gets people to say yes to the collective or group goals. Right?
So and that's because you're in the equation and your presence is making a difference to the outcome. You're influencing, right? Otherwise, they wouldn't have said yes.
They wouldn't have said yes. And they wouldn't. Right. So, you know, as a leader, you're defining where the objective is, where is the future, where is the goal, what is the mission and vision, and mm-hmm. then you're inviting people to join you,
mm-hmm.
right? And you know, even if it's a team of one, right?
Right.
I have interns from time to time. I have a new intern, and he's at university doing an English literature degree, and his mum actually contacted my wife and said, you know, could her son do some work in my company? And I asked him, and it's just so much fun working with this, you know, bright young man, giving him something to do that is useful, that mm-hmm. is taking the study that he is doing and applying it practically. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm giving him some stuff to edit, and offering him, you know, what would you like to do? He said, well, I want to do some creative part. I go, okay. So here's some topics. Go away, write on this. Let me have a look at your writing. And then mm-hmm. I'm able to give him feedback and develop him. Now,
right.
It's useful to me because he goes and does some grunt work around the research. Then I can have a look at it and I mm-hmm. can guide him. So I'm asking him to do something and he's asking me to do something, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a very simple piece of leadership. Mm-hmm. Now, so many people do not have the ability to ask. So people mm-hmm. come to me and say, well, how do I ask for a pay rise? Well, I said, well, first, before you ask for the pay rise, did you ask how are you adding value? Mm-hmm. Did you ask, you know, how you can expand the value that you're currently.
Right.
Did you ask what value has already been achieved mm-hmm. from the organization? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people don't realize what their contribution is worth to the company. Mm-hmm. So a question I often ask my coaches is, if you didn't turn up for 6 months,
yeah,
right, what would happen? Now, if they can replace you in a week, then you don't mm-hmm. have a lot of value. You don't have a lot of opportunity to ask for a pay rise.
Right.
But if the wheels are going to fall off, then you actually have a great deal of leverage.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And
so
you can use
what
that,
is
right?
your value? Mm-hmm. And so leadership is, you know, seeing the value, articulating the value, and asking.
Mm-hmm. And creating win-win situations, right? For, as you rightly mentioned with the example of your intern there.
Not
many bosses would give the liberty or ask this question, what would you like to work on? That's the sort of ideal workplace everybody would like to be in, you know, rather than just being a cog in a giant machine where they don't get recognized or even asked. So that's a great opportunity. So you've given him that freedom.
Mm-hmm. But that is the nature of work today. I mean, that is hashtag mm-hmm. future of work, right?
Yeah.
The way you articulate, I mean, I remember many years ago being asked by the HR of an international law firm to work with a very important partner of their firm,
yep.
because he referred to his associates as units of production. talk about dehumanizing people.
They were units of production. I went to a manufacturing unit, Andrew, once, and they actually had numbers on the uniform. So you did not have your actual name on the uniform. You had a number. And I joked about it because they also had numbers on their fans and their air conditioners and their computers. And then they had employee numbers. Think about that.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'll give you a practical example. I mean, I've worked in companies, I've owned companies. Then I went to, you know, complete, you know, just working by myself for a bit, uh-huh. which was really nice. And then, with, you know, as we've pivoted into this online space, just as you have a team, mm-hmm. I hired agencies periodically to do work for me. Mm-hmm. And they would do work, and sometimes, you know, they would promise me the world but delivered me a cardboard box. Mm-hmm. And then I just got frustrated and I'm like, hang on a moment, I need to pick the best person for this. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, with the gig economy, I was able to go and say, okay, I want somebody who, you know, understands this part of, you know, the funnel marketing mm-hmm. software. And I mm-hmm. hired the best person for that. I got myself a YouTube coach so that my YouTube was improved. You know, mm-hmm. I have my intern doing some scripting. I hired a copywriter out of the United States because I wanted the languaging for some mm-hmm. of the marketing I was doing to be in American English.
Right.
So, and the joy of working with people who were working on the stuff that they loved and were passionate to do was huge, rather than trying to fit somebody into a particular role. Mm-hmm. And managers have to get used to this. Leaders have to get used to this mm-hmm. gig economy way of working, mm-hmm. onboarding the right people who are passionate, and stop trying to fit a square peg into a round hole.
Right, which will open up numerous possibilities as well as challenges. Possibilities in terms of you hire the best talent from wherever you can, challenges, cross-cultural challenges, and of course, the resistance from people who are around you to, but I think it will be a win-win in the sense that these competitive forces will force people to up their game across the world. So this is actually the future of work is exciting in every sense of the way. And I love that. I'm going to just circle back to the leadership aspect of the beliefs and becoming a better leader, especially in these challenging times. And I know we are approaching our 45 minute mark very soon, but this question really important here. Imposter syndrome. We have a lot of people talking about it, especially those who are new in leadership positions, feel like, I don't deserve to be here. Who am I? You know, why should I be even telling these people what to do? How do I exert my authority? How much of it? Can it backfire? You know, that fear. What if this person does not do what I ask them to? My authority will be challenged, et cetera, et cetera. So they're, especially in the people who have just stepped into leadership roles, they've done the inner work, there's self-belief, but there's a lot of doubts when it comes to leading others, especially the imposter syndrome. Your thoughts on that and how to overcome it?
Okay. So it's interesting you raise that. So that is the self-leadership piece. I mean, imposter syndrome is that level of self-doubt. So there are a number of ways of approaching this, but I have nothing to prove, only things to improve, right? Realizing that we are influencing people every day. Right. You know, when you wake up, you know, you're influencing your spouse or your kids. Right. So people will look to the people with intention. Going back to our story about where do we eat on Friday night? We're in a group. Right. Giving yourself permission that if you don't step up and make an objective, then nobody gets to eat. So somebody has to do this, and accepting that and recognizing, well, they did follow and we did get an objective together. Now, there's a great video on YouTube, and there's a TED talk with it, which is how to start a movement. And I'm sure you've seen the video.
It's
the guy dancing on the side of a hilltop, and he's doing this crazy dance, and everybody thinks it's crazy. But then there is a first follower. And the first follower comes and joins him, and that actually is a form of leadership in itself, is you're following somebody else's mission, and then that person gets other people to join. And that's a great video for anybody to watch.
Great metaphor,
I mean, other than checking out your channel and my channel, that's a great video. And, and it just goes, you only have to be a little bit ahead, right? You know, if you've got a younger sibling, you were able to help them out with their homework. If you've got an older sibling, you were able to ask them with your homework, right? The point is you only have to help somebody to the next step. You don't have to know it all. And imposter syndrome comes with overinflating. What is it I need to know? All you need to know is a little bit, what is the next step or the next three steps?
Right.
You don't have to necessarily know the whole journey. And it's an acceptance of, I don't know, we're going to work this out together, but this is the direction that we're going in, and you will find your followers. And then recognizing those, right? Recognizing. And we talking about value, here's one last exercise that I'll share is go to your trusted circle. And we said, you know, who am I? You know, I'm a father, I'm a brother, I'm a speaker, or I'm a coach, or whatever that you and I have. And ask people what the adjectives they have for you in terms of the value that you create.
Right.
What is it that I do? If I turn up, what else is it I do? Now, I was fortunate I was able to do this with a marketing company, and they went to 500 of my clients, and you know, they sent out a whole bunch of survey, and this, we did this way back in 2016. Just I was pivoting my messaging, and I really wanted to know how people perceived me
using adjectives. Using adjectives.
Yeah, there were all sorts of people. That anybody who had, you know, been to a speech or, you know, been coached by me. So anybody that had contact with me, we went out and asked, and we got 500 responses, which is it's a significant piece. And, you know, what did they think about the value that I bought? And they put it through a word cloud that, you know, sorted out the synonyms. And I got three words: transformation, ownership, and impact. That, you know, when I turn up, change happens. When I turn up, I get people to take ownership of that change, because that's the self-leadership bit, taking ownership. And that it has real-world results. You know, it increases profit or decreases expenses or, you know. And I was like, I was so happy with this, because then I thought I knew my own values, but the value that other people take from me, that transformation, change. I'm all about change. If there's no change, why am I turning up? You know, my mission is to wake people up, create a change, transformation, ownership. I'm not going to do it for you. I'm not your mummy. I'm not your daddy. I'm not going to change your diapers. I want you to make the change for yourself. That's ownership. Mm-hmm. And it's going to have a real world consequence. It's measurable. There's an objective. We can see what that change is.
Right.
And it gave me so much clarity. And it gave me the permission to step up and be a leader because I'm creating the change. Mm-hmm. And so if my journey can inspire your audience to step up and see that they have value, stop being an imposter, just take people. What's the value? Because people appreciate you and you don't necessarily know they do. And what you do then is you just get that feedback. Oh, I am making a difference.
Right.
And then internalize that. Right. Now, if I've got a minute, I'll finish with a last story.
Which is, please. Yeah, I'm sure.
20 plus years ago, more than that maybe, when I nearly 25 years ago, when I was just starting out my career as a coach, I was invited to do some work with teenagers at a camp. And it was off in the country. I drove to the country and I did this session with the teenagers. You know what this is like. I got them to do some activities. This was in Australia, yeah.
Okay.
And I got these kids to do some activities and, you know, let go of their limiting beliefs. And, you know, we did a lot of the stuff we're talking about today.
Sure.
And I got them to rip up their fears and you know, we had a symbolic burning of all the negative self-talk and it was, you know, very symbolic, right? And then I got in my car to drive back to the city after this session and one of the teenagers knocked on the window of my car. I wound down the window of my car, which tells you how long ago this was and, you know, what an old car it was because it had a windy down window and they handed me an envelope.
I remember those.
They handed me an envelope. And it was a big A4 envelope, and they said, "For later." And I was like, okay. And I threw it on the passenger seat, started driving into the city. Now, curiosity got the best of me, and eventually I opened the envelope, and inside it was full of little post-it notes. And I read the first note, and it said, "You don't know me, but you know, I used to harm myself, and people wanted me to talk about it, but your exercise really helped me let it go. Thank you, Mr. Bryant." And I'm like, oh, wow. And then the next one, somebody, you know, wrote, you know, "You don't know me," or, you know, I attempted suicide and this really helped me. Thank you. I had to pull the car over. I wept because I hadn't realized the impact I had made.
Right.
Now, I kept that envelope and I put it in the shoebox under my bed. And anytime I had a really tough day, I'd get it out and read it and know at least I made a difference to that one. Right.
Sure.
I lost that envelope for years. And I was just in 2019, I was doing a speech on legacy for, actually it was for Deloitte Asia. And they asked me to do a keynote speech. I want to talk about legacy. And lo and behold, in preparing for that speech, I found the box.
Your box. Okay.
After all these years, I hadn't lost it. It was there. And I told this story, you know, you don't know the difference that you are making. And so that's what leadership is. And that's what blows away the imposter syndrome.
If
you've been a manager, you are making a difference in people's lives.
I think two or three things, Andrew, stand out from what you just said. A, it's important to get in touch with the end impact of what you're doing. It could be really small, but, you know, and you could be overestimating your ability of what you're supposed to do in a leadership role, and you might just be making a small difference somewhere. Get in touch with that, and that'll be the fuel for you to do greater things. And the second part, what I loved about is in a new leadership position, you don't need to know everything. It's okay to just know the two or three steps, because guess what? We have a lot of people who don't know even the next step and they're still in leadership positions. And even if you know the next two or three, it's okay to take your team along because you will figure out the way together. It's okay to be in that position of vulnerability. I think we need to do away with the superhero image that we have of leaders. You know, it's like the guy, the person who knows everything, who can fix everything and who is supposed to know everything, while you are a fellow explorer. You're leading them on that journey together. And together you find the answers. This has been such a beautiful interaction here today, Andrew. Thank you so much for freely sharing your knowledge and your wisdom. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you. And we will leave the links for Andrew's website, his books and videos and YouTube channel in the comments, in the description below of the video below. And feel free to, down there and click and subscribe to his channel, please, guys. Please support him on his YouTube journey. He's got tremendous value to add through some of the videos that I've seen personally. So go watch those. And a couple of things before we sign off for the day. A big thank you to the loyal viewers of the Beginner's Mind series. Whenever average watch duration shoots up, sub, we know it is you guys who are watching these hour-long videos. We really appreciate that. Also, please be aware of the fact that we have the audio formats available. So if you're driving, cooking, or exercising, should you be watching these? Because you'll have a lot of aha moments. So viewer discretion, listener discretion is advised, but audio formats are available on Spotify, Google, or Apple Podcasts, whatever you prefer. Three very important things before I sign off. Please create an implementation plan. If you've come this far in this video, 60 minutes so far, I believe 54, you would not be doing full justice to the time you've spent if you do not walk away with an implementation plan. I invite you to do three specific things. Participate in the discussion in the comments section. Implement some of the simple takeaways. Andrew mentioned about the daily morning exercise, about the intentionality, writing your journal. Pick something that you can start doing straight away and do it now. And the third thing is learn with the intention to share and teach with other people. That's how information sticks longer. Andrew, once again, we are truly thankful to you for your time.
My pleasure.
All right. Take care. Thank you.